Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
What does an 18-year veteran of the tech industry and a 20-year veteran of the military have in common? More than you might think. Welcome, everyone, to the Second Act podcast, leveling up your life's journey. Hey, John.
Hey, Michael. Good morning. How you doing, sir?
I am doing great. How are you doing this morning?
Man, it is a good day. I didn't get my workout in this morning, but I'm loaded up with coffee, so that's going to make up for it until after we record, and then we're off to the gym. So definitely feeling a little bit different than usual because my normal routine is workout, a little bit of self-time and quiet time, and then we hit record, but not today. It doesn't always work out with kids, so
no,
we're going to give it a
go. Yeah, I did a mini workout today. It's a quick 10 minutes on the TRX straps for some strength training, but it's not enough. But I after reading a really interesting post I shared on LinkedIn about a dial versus a switch, all or nothing versus like just doing what you can, you know, dialing it down but getting something in, that has resonated with me, and that's what I applied this morning in my prep for this episode.
Love it. Definitely a dial. Sometimes you got to turn it up to 11 to make up for those fours, though.
You do. All right. Well, welcome back to the Second Act podcast with Michael and John. We are here in another amazing episode and thrilled to have another guest speaker on our show today.
Yeah.
In our last episode, we discussed a variety of things that hopefully inspired and motivated our audience, and more to come on those two important characteristics in the conversation that we're going to have today. So why don't you introduce our amazing guest here, John?
Yeah, man. Well, I'm really excited about today's episode. We've got David Lucas, and man, we're honored to be joined by him. He's a 26-year Army Special Forces officer who has spent almost his entire career within the Special Operations, serving in some of DOD's most esteemed organizations, such as 75th Ranger Regiment and the 5th Special Forces Group, and has completed 11 overseas deployments. Holy cow.
I
thought
impressive.
Four or five was a lot, but 11, man. Most recently, Dave commanded a Special Operations Task Force operating across the Middle East in the fight against ISIS. He currently is a battalion commander at the JFK Special Warfare Center and School at Fort Liberty, North Carolina, where he's responsible for developing the next generation of Green Berets.
Wow.
He is an expert in irregular warfare, as well as the creation, training, and employment of unique and specialized capabilities. Outside of leading some of our nation's finest soldiers in support of our nation's national objectives, Dave likes to spend time with his wife of 21 years. Congratulations.
Congrats.
And their two beautiful children on various family adventures. Man, Dave, I'm sure your background has piqued our audience's interest. I know it's piqued mine, but welcome to the show. Welcome to Second Act.
Hey, thanks, John. Thanks, welcome. Michael. It's great to be here.
Man, well, that is a lot of history, and we've got not a lot of time, so we're going to just get right into it. So, Dave, first of all, again, welcome on the show, but let's start from the beginning. Where did you grow up, and what are some of your childhood memories that really shaped your thinking and influenced your decisions at a younger age?
Well, so I'm originally from Knoxville, Tennessee. I grew up there. I guess I would say I was born in Richmond. When I was six, I moved to Tennessee. So I am a Tennessee native with a touch of Virginia.
Okay.
I come from a service oriented family, and you know, and as I look back on my childhood, it was great. I'm one of four kids, two boys, two girls. My dad was a lawyer. My mother was a teacher, but spent most of my life raising hooligans like myself. And as I grew up, you know, it's to focus on one or two things is very difficult. But I will tell you one thing that really sticks out was when I was 9 years old. My dad took me out to Wyoming, and we did a 2 week trip out through the backcountry, and it was a. Yeah. There were lessons that I learned out there. One, it was just a lot of fun. Two, it was full of lessons that I later on probably drew from of, you know, hey, you got to do it yourself, right? And then it was so meaningful to me that I actually took my son on the same. I recreated the trip many years later when my son turned 10. The day after his 10th birthday, we flew out and spent 2 weeks out in Wyoming. In the Wind River Range specifically, if anybody's familiar, but and then Tetons, Yellowstone, the whole shebang.
Beautiful.
So it was phenomenal.
So was it a combination of family vacation / wilderness training, or like what was going on that sort of made it so special?
It was just being out. Both trips was just being out, both as the son and then as the father. Being out with my dad and then being out with my son. For my son, he was 10. He's never known a world without Wi-Fi and without cellular coverage. So, of course, that didn't exist in 87 when I first went out there. And as we were driving out, my son said, "Hey, Dad, can I use your phone for something? Can I look something up?" "Absolutely." He looks over and he goes, "Why does it say no service?" So that was lesson number one. So it was great, you know, but just being able to spend that time together. Both in both circumstances, it really is invaluable because you see very, very few people out there. And as you're going out there, you have nothing to do but to talk, stop and fish in streams and make camp for the night. And you get into that rhythm and it's great. So my wife asked me before we left, she said, what will you do if you go out there? And he decides halfway through, he doesn't want to do it anymore. And I said, well, that's the beauty of it. Nobody cares.
Yep.
And once you step foot, like you're in it, and you have to own it, and you've got to do it. And that was a lesson my son learned, and as well as myself. So it was really invaluable.
Very cool.
And that trip is actually you kind of cauterized the learning points that you got on that trip with your son. I think that you learned with your, you know, originally with your dad taking you on that trip, and then you were able to kind of pass those things along to your son. And you had that experience wrapped up in a LinkedIn post. I encourage anybody listening that wants to read it. It's really encouraging just to, you know, be present with your kids, but also just to kind of present them with difficult choices that they've got to now walk, you know, figure out on their own which direction they're going to go. And what route they're going to choose. So great post, by the way.
Thank you. On that. Appreciate it.
Yeah. Using that as a forcing mechanism for mindfulness and being present. A lot of people, I think, nowadays yearn for a world where they can get away from the technology for a period of 24 hours. A week probably seems like an eternity to most people nowadays. Let alone, you know, people are, if they don't have their phone for an hour, they want to know what's happening. There's certainly a lesson in there that you'd made me think about with my family and my son. So I'll have to rethink maybe what we're planning to do next summer for vacation. So thank you for that, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely. Highly recommend it for anyone. It is life-changing.
Absolutely. Well, Dave, what was the catalyst that made you actually want to step out and serve your country? And when did that decision take place?
Well, there wasn't a specific act. As I said, my dad had served. He's a Vietnam veteran. My grandfather, my son, traced recently back, and we actually have the oldest person. So the first person born that is buried in Arlington Cemetery. Is a relative, distant relative of ours. So our family goes all the way back to the Revolution. And so it just runs in our family. I was never pressured. In fact, when I came home after I'd made the decision, I came home and told my parents at breakfast one morning, I said, hey, I've decided to join the Army, and this is what I want to do. And my mom cried, and my dad said, my dad told me all the reasons that I shouldn't join. And I asked him later, I said, well, why'd you do that? He said, well, I didn't want you to join under false pretenses. I wanted you to understand what was in store, potentially. And this is all prior to 9/11, so it was good. And then what made the decision for me was I was actually vacillating back and forth between two paths I wanted to go. I was 17, 18, as most young men do. I thirst for adventure. I wanted to get out. I wanted to leave Tennessee and go do some stuff. I'd actually been hired on. I was going to go out and work on a ranch in Wyoming. And one of the things that I wanted to do, I thought that would be great. But instead, I joined the Army. And that was the other course of action that I was going back and forth. And obviously, I chose the Army. I don't regret it, but I still don't have a horse, and I still I don't think I'll ever be a cowboy. But it was something that I really wanted to do, but maybe in another lifetime.
That your story isn't too far away from mine, because I was offered a job outside of college, sitting behind a desk, not Wyoming and not on a farm, but very, very sedentary. And I thought, man, there's got to be more to doing life. And I'm able, I'm young, I'm ready to go serve my country. I think I'm going to choose that choice. So it's interesting how when you're put in front of a decision, you can choose either the easy route or not the easy route, but you can choose a route, or you can kind of force yourself into some of those growth places that really make us who we are today. So
absolutely. And, my family, both my grandfathers were World War II veterans, and I always looked up to them. And there's so much, there's something about service and serving something greater than yourself that I probably didn't appreciate as a teenager, but have grown into and really truly appreciate that. Something that I try and pass on now to our kids. And that is really, it's okay to get out. It's not limited to the Army. There's a whole host of ways you can work in the civilian world and volunteer in your local community. It can be something simple as volunteering at church or wherever you go, right? But just doing something that helps other people. And I've been very fortunate, as you have, John, to find a career that allows you to do that while also having a lot of fun working with great people and getting to travel all over the world. And so it's been great.
I'm really intrigued by your father's response. It was similar to my father's response, but your dad went to West Point. He was a cadet at West Point, correct?
And he was.
Yeah, and then for him to come back with that response of not wanting to push you into the service, like so many of our fathers have done, is kind of encourage us to take routes that they're familiar with. But he chose the alternative just to see, kind of test your mettle and see if that was really, truly a decision you wanted to take.
It was definitely a surprise for my family. I fit the mold of your typical special forces officer, which is to say I was pretty rambunctious, to say the least, in high school. So my parents didn't think I would do well with authority and that sort of thing. And what I have been able to do, as most of the guys or folks that I've worked with, is channel that into something positive, and it's been a lot of fun.
Man, that's awesome. Well, Dave, walk us through your military journey and your career from non-commissioned officer to commissioned officer. As maybe some of our listeners don't know, that's not really the traditional route. Most people either go the non-commissioned route, which is joining the service after high school. And then a lot of officers traditionally start after or post college and go the officer route. And it is, I guess, less common that somebody will go from non-commissioned, going, joining the service after high school, and then working themselves into a degree and then transitioning into the officer route. But then also you chose the special forces amongst all those decisions. So kind of talk us through that journey.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll try and be as succinct as possible over upcoming, closing in on 3 decades, which sounds weird. I remember those guys when I was younger. Every one of those guys is retired now, and now I meet soldiers that were born 5 years after I came in the Army, or 6 or 7, and it's just,
that's wild.
It's a humbling experience, right? So and trying to keep up with them. But yeah, so as I said, I was, for me, it was go out and work on a ranch in Wyoming, which sounded great, or join the Army. My father had actually been had enlisted. He dropped out of college. I had a full ride, dropped out, and ended up going into Special Forces right away back in the early 60s. And then from there, he left and went to West Point. And so I decided that, it would probably be pretty easy to dime store psychoanalyze me and say, hey, I'm just trying to keep up with my dad, probably. But it's been a great path to keep up with, and it was really inspiring. And so what I did after high school is I joined as an infantryman in 11 Bravo. So just I was a private private one, the lowest rank you can come in, and went out to basic training, went through jump school, went to and then ended up going to the 75th Ranger Regiment, where I grew up on a machine gun team, and then I left as a fire team leader. So I was in charge of 3 other Rangers, and that was all prior to the war. I left in early 2000, with the obviously prior to everything. Everything happening that's taken place over the last 20 plus years. I always knew I was going to go to college, so I did. I got out. A guy that is now a federal judge had graduated Florida State, and I was like, man, that sounds great. And so I went home for a semester. I was a Ranger team leader on Friday, and on Monday I was sitting in philosophy 101 at the local community college back in Knoxville.
Wow.
And so it was a pretty rapid transition. You juxtapose that with the fantastic processes that they have now. Like when I got out, I went, nice lady typed up on a typewriter, my DD-214, said, hey, tell me all the schools you went to, all your awards, this, that, and the other. She handed me a piece of paper and said, okay, you're out of the Army. And I went and got in my car and I drove home. So that was it.
Wow.
So it was pretty rapid. And so anyway, I went to, ended up moving down to Tallahassee that summer, went to school, ended up, I joined a 20th Special Forces Group, which is a National Guard unit down there, operating out of Florida, headquartered out of Alabama. Yeah. I thought, boy, this is a great deal. And the reason I did that was because I really missed the people. It became glaringly obvious to me when I got out that I really worked with some great folks. And so,
yeah,
I found out about the Special Forces in the Guard and decided to go check that out. I was already moving to Florida. Easy day. So I joined the Guard eventually about a year later. I went to Special Forces selection the first time as an E5, so a sergeant. And I ended up getting medically dropped right at the end. So that was pretty hard to take. But they said, hey, you can come back. I still have the sheet of paper showing I was medically dropped. And then they said, hey, you can come back. I went back to my unit. They pulled myself and another guy who had actually been the Ranger Battalion with me. And they said, hey, we want you to become officers and become detachment commanders, because they were very short on officers. I had no interest whatsoever in becoming an officer. And I said, no, thank you. I was told to sit back down by my company sergeant major and stop being a selfish son of a gun and think about the unit. And so I said, how is this my problem? I don't want to do that. This is what I want to do. So we came to a deal. I said, okay, I'll join ROTC. And during that time, I'll stay in the company and I'll learn how to be a detachment commander. And they said, okay, deal.
Yeah.
So I went the following week after I went back to college and I signed I signed up for ROTC. So folks may not know this, but when you sign in that third year, so I was going into my junior year, when you sign that is a military contract. So they've got you. About 8 to 10 days later, 9/11 happened. And I was, like everybody else, I was with my then fiance. School got canceled, and I don't know what to think. The long story short on that is I ended up revoking my reserve contract so I could come back active duty. And then I crammed as many classes as possible in so I could graduate early. So I ended up graduating in 3.5 years because I didn't want to miss the war.
Wow.
Turns out that wasn't an issue. It would be around for a while. Maybe I should have stayed for another semester and had a good time, but everything happens for a reason and had a great time. So
yeah,
fast forward, I was commissioned as an artillery officer. I went straight to 10th Mountain. I got there. I checked out on, I got in, checked in the unit, and they give you, 10 days to get settled. So Friday I checked in, went home for the weekend. Hey, I'll see you in 10 days or so. That Sunday night, I got a phone call. Hey, we just got emergency deployment orders. We're leaving ASAP. Come in tomorrow. So I had about 36 hours of what they call permissive TDY to get my wife settled. It was just the two of us at the time. So
36 hours to get settled. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I didn't leave the door. We did a couple weeks of train up, and then we left. But we still had everything packed up, and because we had just moved in that week. So I went overseas. Ended up doing a year in Baghdad as I was a fire support officer, and then I was a platoon leader for the last half, and learned a lot of lessons. I look back on that time as I call myself a feral lieutenant because I was just given my platoon and told to go out and quote unquote secure your sector. I said, okay, sir, what does that mean? Just get out there, Dave, and go do it. I said, okay, all right, we'll give it a shot, and so. That was from 04 to 05. I came back immediately, 72 hours after landing in New York. We were gone. My wife and I took some leave, and then I checked in to what was back then called ROPE, the Ranger Officer Program, I believe it was, or orientation. I was going through the course to try and get back in the Ranger Regiment. I was successful, yeah. And then ended up going back and was back in Iraq six months after redeploying. And did that a few times, ended up deciding, my friend called me and said, hey, once that time was up, Special Forces is taking out of your group waivers. So I called him up, guy pulled up my record and he goes, yeah, we'll take you. And, that was my application. So it was pretty streamlined. It was 2007. I think they just needed people. Okay. And, I was the beneficiary of that. So I started that whole journey. Did a few more, another few trips to Iraq. Was actually there in 2011 when we shut down, and as a detachment commander, and then I volunteered to go back and teach the course. So I did that for a couple of years, got my master's degree at National Defense University, and then moved up, and did a few more trips after that. And then eventually in 2021, I was selected for battalion command in 5th Special Forces Group. And, which I have to say, I've had a lot of great jobs, that I've probably gone into too much detail on, but that was absolutely, I think, one of, if not the best. I mean, just to be able to serve and have that many folks, a typical Special Forces detachment has 12 people on it. And this having an entire battalion. So 18 of those teams. Plus all the support folks that go into it in the headquarters, that just being surrounded by that many fantastic people was great. Did another trip over there this time, as you mentioned, John, had command of the task force, and then came back and was selected for another battalion command, which is where I'm at now, which is, the honor of a lifetime, getting to help shape and mentor the next generation that's going to take on whatever comes in the future. So I'm not an instructor as I was back. We've got phenomenal instructors out there who really, really care, and the level of care that they take to put in with these with the students that are going through is remarkable. And they're taking their 10, 15, sometimes 20 plus years of experience and trying to transpose that into these new students, which I'm sure is overwhelming, because the experiences are very different than when I went through the course, where a lot of us were combat veterans. So. And that is almost 27 years is probably a little bit too long, but
in some ways it probably went by in a blink, and in other ways you enjoyed each moment, and it was a lifetime of experience, I imagine.
It is. I suffer from an embarrassment of riches, and you're absolutely right. It's gone by. When you say, when you put a number to it, it's I'm like, no, that can't be right. that can't be right. But it is.
Dave, I'm smiling when you're talking about these deployments, and you did 11 deployments, almost 27 years, or just over 27 years in the Army, and I'm smiling because you're probably a lot like me. When we're on these deployments, when we're on these gut-wrenching moves or, you know, these transitions that we aren't really looking forward to, there's some experience of a little bit of pain and adjustment and the mindset of fluidity and perseverance. But I know that when I would get home after a deployment, you know, and people would ask how it was or how it went, I'd always think, oh man, it was so much fun. We had such a great time. And I can only remember the good things. And you kind of tend to block out the bad, which is interesting because, you know, when you think about customer service and, you know, a restaurant or hotel providing a service, it's always the negative things that people remember. But I think military guys are wired a little different. We always remember the good stuff and kind of dwell on those. Well, at least I do. And when I come back from a deployment, I think, oh, I could do that again. Yeah, it was not a big deal. And then if somebody told me, oh, you got to go spend 9 more months in Iraq or Afghanistan, I think, oh my goodness, what did I volunteer for? No. Is that kind of your history?
Absolutely. It is unique, right? As you mentioned, it's, you look back and sure, there are the times where you remember the bad that happened, of course. And there's, you know, so not trying to romanticize it in any way. And back to,
yeah, of course,
you know, what my dad, the reason that he told me, you know, some of the reasons not to, right, when I initially joined is, you know, being a Vietnam veteran as an infantryman like this, that was, you know, it's a rough road to hoe.
Sure.
And so, but yeah, I've just always loved the people. I've loved the mission. You know, I love our country. I want to defend it. And so I've been afforded that opportunity and getting the chance to do that and do it in the manner that I've been able to do has been fantastic. It's humbling. If I looked back, you know, if you went back to 97 or even 2000 or shoot yesterday and said, hey, mapped out my career and said, hey, here's what the opportunities, the people that you're going to be able to work with and things you're going to be able to do. There's no way I would have believed it and said, absolutely yeah. not. But, you know, here we are.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PIE, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
So David, I want to sort of recap a few things and step by step here. So you as a teenager had some rebellious tendencies that you channeled into the pursuit of the special forces, and you didn't make it through the first time. You got med dropped, and then you reapplied at some point, made it through, and you basically take these setbacks, these obstacles that have happened in each stage, and you look at it more as an opportunity. And I imagine when you're faced with each of these, tell us about the mindset you have, because we're talking about the second act here, people who are contemplating or in something significantly different that typically involves a lot of challenges in what they do. What is the mindset that you have, that you've learned over your experiences and through life, that you can share with our audience that's helped you enter each new phase of your career and maybe where you want to go next?
Absolutely. Thanks, Michael. It mindsets, like a lot of things, right, shift over time. When I was young, when I first started, hey, can I do this? I wanted an adventure. That was my primary thing. And, you know, like most young men, I wanted to get out. I wanted to use my craft and do what we were trained to do. And then, but over time, right, as experience happens. I was a young single teenager when I started. Now I'm, you know, married almost 22 years. I've got two kids. Life is very different, right? And so now, like, mindset, it started as a challenge. And then every time I wanted to go somewhere else and do something else, first off, my wife has been an absolute, you know, I don't know what medal she deserves, but it far exceeds anything that I can give her. She's always supported me and really truly believes. And in fact, I discussed one time getting out with her, and she surprised me. She'd never said anything like this before. She said, "You know, I'm really proud of what we do, and I'm proud of that." And you know, this is 2007 time frame, and she said, "So I don't get out on my account." And I said, "Well, okay." And here we are, 16 years later. So it's, but as far as mindsets, you know, each time I've tried something new, I've changed jobs so many times, as most people do in the military, right? You very rarely do the same thing over and over again, but I've changed different units, over time, and I've always enjoyed the challenge. And frankly, I think that's part of what has kept me going and motivated and sharp to continue, because I always have to prove myself. And you know, wherever you go, if you're the new person around, nobody knows you, and you can't really rest on your laurels. So it's been a lot of fun. Yeah. And then once I crossed, once I got older, and truly now, it is, you know, what can I give back to those that come after me? You know, take these experiences, and if I could download it on a USB drive and hand it to the students, say, "Hey, here's all the ways that I've messed up, right? And here's some things that work, but more importantly, I think here are the things that I did that didn't work, that hopefully would make them and those that they serve with better, and, you know, potentially save somebody's life down the road." So that's really what's kept me going over the years.
And I mean, your story, you've been thrust into circumstances, situations where you didn't have any experience in some cases, and you were just asked to lead. Did you ever have like moments of self-doubt or imposter syndrome, something we talk about occasionally, or has there been like a major setback, you know, in the course of those 20-something years that has just been sort of jarring to you? And how did you persevere through that? I think our audience would love to hear from your perspective,
absolutely,
given your very unique background.
Imposter syndrome is very real. It is real. I think in anybody that doesn't have that, or you know, you don't have to say it out loud, but I think everybody knows that it really is, like, can I measure up? And for the longest time, again, it shifted over time, and I was really genuinely nervous before taking new positions, whatnot. You naturally become more comfortable over time, but eventually I kind of looked at it and said, okay, now at least I have and this is where training comes in, right? In whatever you do, once you've done it a few times and train, you gain confidence that, okay, I've done this. Yeah. So therefore, you know, it doesn't mean I can do that, but at least I know that I can learn something new. Right. And then with the challenges and how do you get over imposter syndrome? I think it's healthy to frankly not really ever get over it, because if you start resting on your laurels and say, "Hey, I got this," you know, that's when I think people can miss a step, because there's always somebody coming behind you that is really working hard and really going after it. And so, you know, and people think of, you know, you talk about failure as success as a linear path, when it's very much not, as I think everybody knows, it's been around for a minute. It's got peaks and it's got valleys. And I think you learn a lot about yourself if you can take those valleys, do a good autopsy on it, and then pull a lesson or two out of it. And it doesn't have to be grand every time, right? But it's still, if you can learn those lessons. And I've tried to do that every time. Sometimes it takes a while. You have to think about something and you know, frankly, get over your pity party, however big that may be. But eventually, I'll try and look back on something and try and pull a lesson out of it. And you know, it's not, I don't have a system for it. It's just when you think about it, okay, what can I do better the next time to make sure that doesn't happen? And then just keep trying, because, you know, back to the imposter syndrome, you know, there's nothing, Jeff Bezos didn't wake up or Elon Musk is the two richest people in the world, right? They're just normal people that had an idea and then pursued it and went after it. And I think that everybody starts the same way. Sure, you have different circumstances that everybody grows up in, so don't discount that. But at the end of the day, we're all people, and if they can do it, then you can do it. And that's really something that I, you know, after I had a couple successes, I said, okay, if that person can do it, you know, I may not be able to do it as well, but I know I can do it. So that's sure. That's got me through a lot more than I would care to admit, but it's been pretty helpful over the years.
Yes, but
that's a great framework to think about, is everyone's human. And like you said, everyone maybe is starting from a slightly different place. But if you look to your neighbor to the left and to the right, and they're doing something that you want to do, and that they're just a person just like you, it's a good sort of motivation, like, hey, I can do it too. I think it's pretty powerful to think about in that way. We may not, you know, achieve, I don't even know how many numbers are in Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk's net worth these days. And I don't know if that's really, you know, maybe it's the goal for some people, but I think just the ability to persevere and push through and accomplish something, like not quitting, is really gets you 80% of the way there. The other 10-20% is probably learning some skills.
Dave, I'm typically going back and asking a lot of our guests to go back and ask them things about their past that kind of amplifies where they're at today. But I'm going to throw you a curveball, and I'm going to have you jump ahead, because transition is inevitable. And while you look like you've probably got another decade of good years and you're still in uniform, you know, and still fit and trim and probably in the prime of your career, at some point in the future, we all have to leave, and we all have to leave the service. They won't keep us indefinitely. But that period's going to come where you have to retire from the military and start your second act. So how are you thinking about transition, whether that's 1 year, 5 years, 10 years down the road? And what steps, if any, are you taking to prepare for that change? Because here at the second act, we talk to a lot of people who have already made that transition, but you're one of the first guests who we get to see a sneak peek into what they're doing to get ready for that.
John, I was going to ask you what I should do, but no.
Don't start a podcast.
It's one of those things that, you know, it comes for us all, like you said, right? Like the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Milley, retired earlier this year, right? So no matter where you are, you're going to leave service, and your odds are you're going to do something else. And so if I said I never thought about it, that would obviously be untrue, but I don't have a defined plan yet, but I've honed in. Right now, I'm really focused on learning, because especially with the operational tempo over the last 20 plus years, right, it's been very difficult to do a lot of things. And so that is where I've really tried to learn, because I don't want to cram that learning into 12 months when the pressure is on. And so that's where I'm at right now. I do know a few things that I look at, and, you know, and you can call them pillars or just things that I'm looking for. And one is I want to spend time with my family, as I think most folks do when they retire out of the military. Yep. I want to do something that helps make a difference, and I want to work with great people and then get paid, right? And so, and I think that those places exist. And so as I look at things, incorporating those different things where my passion and experience kind of overlap. And so I don't know exactly where that's at. I'm interested in, and I've talked with a lot of folks and just watching, I think there's a lot of improvement that can take place. There's a budding relationship between the tech industry and DOD, much like there was during the Cold War, where we worked together. And so that has kind of it's a rekindled relationship. And so looking at that is an area where it could continue to potentially give back to in defense of the nation and help arm those that come after me. But and using the experiences that I've had over the years. But that's just an idea as I continue to go out. Right now, I'm focused on producing the best Green Berets that I can, and then whatever the Army has in store for me next. But we will see where it goes. And every day, just having conversations that I've had with y'all has been great, because I get to, I learn something every single time, and it's fantastic. Absolutely. So I appreciate it.
Well, if you need a lead in to the tech sector, I think I may know a guy.
Yeah.
So.
I do. I 18 years in tech has been quite the experience in and of itself. And I know folks who have transitioned out of the military into some cool tech companies that are supporting national security, local law enforcement, things like that. So there are really interesting paths to take there. But it sounded like, you're establishing your roadmap. In our world, we build a roadmap for products. In this case, the product is yourself, and you're trying to build skills and expertise that marries your military experience with what the civilian experience is looking for in those roles. And I think that's a really great idea, so that you can sort of, you may have some idea that is the end in mind and work your way backwards as to what I need to get there, all the while, continuing to serve our country. So I think that's a really smart path to be on, Dave.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate it. And not to brag, but I did get the whole computer set up all by myself this morning. So, feel like I'm pretty well qualified.
Awesome. You're hired.
Whenever you do decide, or the military decides for you that it's time to part ways, what are some of the most important things you'll take away from your time served in the military and being part of the Special Forces community?
There's so much. But, I've been really fortunate. I've worked for and with just the absolute best people in the world. And it's been fantastic. And it's not all roses, right? There are some not along the way that you don't get along with, but that's in every job and every relationship that you have, right? And so, but for me, the people that you work with really matter. The primary reason that I'm still serving is because I get to wake up and work with the best our nation has to offer on a daily basis. And so who I work with is just as important to me as what I get to do, so that you enjoy your time doing that, right? If you're with your best friends, you can go out and dig a ditch and probably have a good time if you're out there enjoying yourself. Unfortunately, there are a lot of opportunities out there where you can find both, what you want to do that overlap with working with great people. And so, but the biggest lesson that I've learned specifically from Special Forces is that, and this is something that I kind of look for or will look for in the future, is when you take a small group of well-trained and enabled and motivated individuals, you can have outsized impacts, right? So how many people have you all reached between the two of you and your podcast and what you're doing? And so, I've seen it time and time again with very small teams that when senior leaders find out that's the magic, they look behind the curtain and see that the wizard is just one guy standing there. It's blown their minds. And, how can that many people have this outsized impact? And so I think that's something that's pretty important to me. And going forward is finding that area where I can continue to do that and work with like-minded folks.
I can attest to that mindset and thought in the private sector. I've worked with very small but highly talented teams. And one of the books that influenced me in the way that I've worked with and for teams is called The Culture Code. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's a really outstanding read, and there's some Special Forces stories in there. But to your point, it comes down to the people who have the right character, the right skills, and know how to work together. And it's just an amazing feeling when it sort of comes together and you have those opportunities to make those significant impacts. It's intoxicating, actually.
Yeah. And I'm going to highlight something, Dave, that I saw this morning, actually. And I was on your LinkedIn page, and there was a reference or a comment from somebody that you used to work with. And he wrote, "Dave is a legend!" Exclamation point. And for those of our listeners that aren't in the military, I'm going to tell you that a reference like that or a comment like that that's left isn't because Dave Lucas is this amazing superhero with guns strapped to his back who goes in busting down doors, guns blazing, and does these amazing things on his own. You get something like that from a superior, from somebody that you've led that truly believes in you as a leader, that truly sees you doing the things that you expect others to do, putting your money where your mouth is. And so, Dave, that stuck out to me, that you truly are in the right place right now. You truly are leading with effectiveness and authority because your troops and the people that you command trust you. And so I wanted to highlight that because not every person that serves, not every officer, especially not every high-ranking officer, has comments left from superiors out there in the public. And that just really stuck out to me. So I wanted to say thanks for your service and thanks for doing it well and leading the way so many people try to do and aspire to do. So congratulations on that, man.
Well, thanks, John. I got to admit, you caught me there. I wasn't expecting that. No, thank you. It's like I said, it's all about the people, and it really is. And I've been very, very fortunate. I've been surrounded and have more blessings than I can imagine. And those all start with the people that are in my life and have been. So I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, Dave, wrapping things up, are there any final thoughts or advice you want to share with our audience before we go to closing? Again, these people are potentially starting their second act or getting things prepared to step into that next chapter. What would you want to leave them with? What would you want to be left with before you transitioned out?
I really appreciate the opportunity to come on here. I've really enjoyed talking with y'all, and it's an honor to be a small part of what you guys are building, and very much appreciate it. You know, for the audience, this may be cliche. Yeah, I'm certainly not the original author on this, but you know, figure out whatever it is that you want to do, and then just go for it. I meet people time and time again. I meet young soldiers, and they find out what I do. It's pretty apparent because we like to wear all of our flair on our uniform. So I'll have young soldiers come up and approach me, and I tell them, I say, look, I don't know anything about you other than the 10 seconds that we've been talking, but go try. You don't want to, years down the road, think that, well, what if I had done this and what if I had done that? I failed at things along the way. But I've been fortunate to have some successes, but it's only because I would have zero if I didn't try. Hey, everybody's 6 foot tall and 215 pounds of pure muscle that succeeds. Well, I'm not. And so does that mean that it was a little bit harder at times? Absolutely. But you can do it, and you just gotta work at it. And there are too many examples. It's what I tell my son. There are just too many examples of people that have had success just getting out there and starting from scratch, right? The more stories that I listen to and that I read on success, particularly within the business world, it's really funny when people talk about some of the success they've had. One that comes to mind is Sarah Blakely, the founder of Spanx.
Yeah.
You know, she just made it up as she went along, and you know, listen to her tell her story is hilarious, and it's inspiring because it's like, why not just go do it? If at the end of the day, you may have to move on to something else, but maybe you won't. Maybe that's it. But you'll never know if you don't try. So
it's good. Yeah, that's really good.
That's a great way to end the main portion of this. And Dave, you have certainly been one of our most interesting guests. I mean, your background is unique to say the least. And we thank you very much for your continued service to our country, you and your fellow teammates in the military. If active duty folks, military veterans, or anyone who's found value in your story wants to find you, reach out to you, what's the best way to do that?
I think LinkedIn is probably the best, and it's where we met, and it's been great. I've enjoyed building a relationship with folks, and so just under Dave Lucas, and pitcher looks just like me, so would love to talk with some more folks.
Perfect. Good.
Yeah, and there's I'll just second that. You've got some really great posts out there. One is about your ultramarathon. Another one is about you taking your son out for the camping trip. And I think the third one I found really valuable was about your dad's delinquency report from West Point. So I encourage whoever wants to find Dave, get out there and look at some of his content that he's pushing out, because it's very valuable. So, man, thank you so much, Dave, for taking time to talk to us today, to share some of the lessons you've learned and the journey that you're on with our listeners. We'll be sure to include the links to your information in the episode details, and we look forward to reconnecting with our audience next week. But man, Dave, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Dave. It's been an honor.
Thanks, Sean. Thanks, Michael. It's been a great time.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week.
See ya.
The Second Act with Michael and John stars Michael Newborn and John Ballinger. The podcast is produced by Seltzer Kings. For more information on the show, check out michaelandjohn.com. Or if you'd like to get involved in the conversation, give the guys a shout on their socials at The Second Act with Michael and John on most platforms. Thanks for listening.